Hare Krishna. What's your name?
Hello.
Hello. Nice for you to come, Srimad Bhagavatam class. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 25, The Glories of Devotional Service. Today, text number 26. Bhaktya pamanjada viragya indriyan.
Bhaktya
pamanjata viragya indriyan. Trishastritan man. Vachanun nichintaya
Vishra Shritan Madhachanan nichintaya
Vishra Shritan Madhachanan nichintaya
Vishra Shritan Madhachanan nichintaya
Chitasya Chato Grahane Yoga Yukto Chitasya Yato Grahane Yoga Yukto Yatishyate Rijubir Yoga Margai Yatishyate Rijubir Yoga Margai
Yatishyate Rijubir Yoga Margai
Bhakya Pumanyata Viragya Andrayan Dirsha Sutan Madrachanan Nuchintaya Chitasyato Grahane Yoga Yukto Yatishyate Rijubir Yoga Margai Bhakya Pumanyata Viragya Jandayan Trishta Sutan Madhuchanan Nuchintaya Chitasyato Grahane Yoga Yukto Yatishyate Rijubir Yoga Margai
Bhakya
Pumanjata Viragya Andraya Trishta Sutan Madhachana Nuchintaya Chitasya Yato Grahane Yoga Yukto Yatishyate Rijubir Yoga Margai Bhakya, by devotional service.
By devotional service.
Bhuman, a person.
A person.
Jagat Varaga.
Jagat Varaga.
Having developed distaste.
Having developed distaste.
Indriyat.
Indriyat.
For sense gratification.
For sense gratification.
Drishta.
Drishta.
Seen in this world.
Seen in this world.
Shutat.
Shutat.
Heard in the next world.
Heard in the next world.
Madrachana.
Madrachana.
My activities of creation and so on.
My activities of creation and so on.
Anuchintaya.
Anuchintaya.
By constantly thinking about.
By constantly thinking about.
Chittasya.
Chittasya.
Of the mind.
Of the mind.
Yataha.
Yataha.
Engaged.
Engaged.
Grahane,
Grahane,
in the control.
In the control.
Yoga yukta.
Yoga yukta.
Situated in devotional service.
Situated in devotional service.
Yatishyate.
Yatishyate.
Will endeavor.
Will endeavor.
Rijubi.
Rijubi.
Easy.
Easy.
Yoga margai.
Yoga margai.
By the process of mystic power.
By the process of mystic power.
Translation and purport by Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus, consciously engaged in devotional service in the association of devotees, a person gains distaste for sense gratification, both in this world and in the next, by constantly thinking about the activities of the Lord. This process of Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of mystic power. When one is actually situated on that path of devotional service, he is able to control the mind. Please repeat. Thus, consciously engaged in devotional service in the association of devotees.
Yes.
Thus, consciously engaged.
Thus, consciously engaged.
In devotional service.
In a devotional service.
In the association of devotees.
In the association of devotees.
A person gains distaste for sense gratification.
A person gains distaste for sense gratification.
Both in this world and in the next.
Both in this world and in the next.
By constantly thinking about the activities of the Lord.
By constantly thinking about the activities of the Lord.
This process of Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of mystic power.
This process
of Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of mystic power. When one is actually situated on the path of devotional service,
when one is actually situated on the path of devotional service,
he is able to control the mind.
He is able to control the mind.
Purport. In all scriptures, people are encouraged to act in a pious way so that they can enjoy sense gratification not only in this life but also in the next. For example, one is promised promotion to the heavenly kingdom of the higher planets by pious fruitive activities. But a devotee in the association of devotees prefers to contemplate the activities of the Lord. How he has created this universe, how he is maintaining it, how the creation dissolves, and how the spiritual kingdom of the Lord's pastimes are going on. There are full literatures describing these activities of the Lord, especially the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Samhita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. The sincere devotee who associates with devotees gets the opportunity to hear and contemplate this subject of the pastimes of the Lord, and the result is that he feels distaste for so-called happiness in this or that world, in the heavenly planets or on other planets. The devotees are simply interested in being transferred to the personal association of the Lord. They have no more attraction for temporary so-called happiness. That is the position of one who is yoga yukta. One who is fixed in mystic power is not disturbed by the allurement of this world or that world. He is interested in the matters of spiritual understanding or the spiritual situation. Could somebody bring some water for me? This sublime situation is very easily attained by the easiest process, bhakti yoga. Rejubir yoga margai. A very suitable word used here is rejubi, or very easy. There are different processes of yoga marg, attaining yoga perfection, but this process of devotional service to the Lord is the easiest. Not only is it the easiest process, but the result is sublime. Everyone, therefore, should try to take to this process of Krishna consciousness and reach the highest perfection of life. Omaganata mananda saganam sana sanakaya chakshun militam yena tasma shigurave namaha shri chaitanya manavisam stapitam yena bhutale svayam upakadam yam dadati sampradikam. So yesterday we were explaining that these verses here, beginning with in this chapter from text number 19, all the way up to the next several verses, text 29, one can refer to them as the Sadhu Sangam. Sadhu Sangam.
Sadhu
Astakam. Right. That how, by the association of pure devotees of the Lord, one can become fixed up in devotional service and at the end of life transfer himself from this material world to the spiritual world. I want to read yesterday's verse and then comment a little bit about that, a little further about that. Yesterday, text 25. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one is gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. So this process of devotional service, we're reading from yesterday from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text number 10. The entire process is given there, how in the beginning one has a desire for spiritual advancement, and by that desire one begins to associate with devotees. And it's this sadhu sangha, this association of Lord's devotees, by which one develops a taste for Krishna consciousness. Practically speaking, one the process is essential for us. Earlier in text 20, Kapila states, every learned person knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement for the spirit's soul. But that same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door for liberation. So this is a simple process by which we can transfer that attachment, that undesirable attachment for material things, to a spiritual personality. Now, the spiritual life is very difficult to understand for the materially conditioned soul. It's like a foreign language. You can't hardly understand it by hearing about it. Also, because there's material attachment, so that material attachment actually blocks our interest in spiritual life. But by coming in contact with a personality who has achieved the threshold of devotional service, and one can see his character, his nature, how he is peaceful and happy, then one, by that association, one develops also a desire to have what the sadhu has. So this principle of association is very powerful and very important. I sometimes, when I speak, I give the example how when I was working here in San Francisco in 1985-86, I was working as a stockbroker, and I was able to witness how, even just by being in the same room, even I didn't really associate with those people so much because I was always just doing my work. Still, just being in that environment, I started to see in myself the development of these same kind of material desires that they had. I could understand this point. This principle is very, very important. It works the other way also, that by associating with sadhus, we develop a desire to become like them. And then we can transfer our attachment from the material things to spiritual life, to the sadhu. So Krishna, he is God. What is God? This is a very difficult concept. People, they have no idea what is God. They'll say, God is love, or, you know, they think of something nice. What is God? Or what is spiritual? They have no idea. So God, we can't understand or appreciate God so much, or spiritual things, but we can understand and appreciate a person. So that person that if we get the association of a sadhu, we can appreciate him, we can transfer our attachment from the material things to this person. And this then opens the door for us to spiritual life. So there's some, our Ritvik friends, they say that one does not need a living spiritual master, that one can that Śrīla Prabhupāda is sufficient for us. But these verses contradict that idea. These verses indicate that one must have association with a living person. And by having that association, then one can transfer their attachment to him or her, in this way become free from their material attachment. Even for those who come now to Krishna consciousness, they haven't really met Srila Prabhupada. They can see some video or hear his lectures, but still, it's not like a living person. As a living person, we can develop relationship with, we can talk to, we can reciprocate with. And this allows us to enter deeply into that relationship and to develop attachment. So, although Prabhupada is indeed the Shiksha Guru for all of us, because we're taking spiritual lessons by reading his books, still one requires the association of living sadhus in order to become attached to the spiritual conception of life. Now in today's verse, it goes on to speak about how one, in that association, one develops a distaste for sense gratification. So the qualification of sadhu is he must already be in such a position. This means sadhu. Earlier, he gives the Kapila gives the explanation. What are these sadhus? He says, these are the qualities of the great devotees who are freed from all attachment. Engaged constantly in hearing and chanting about me, the personality of Godhead. The sadhus do not suffer from material miseries because they always are filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. Oh, my mother, O virtuous lady, these are the qualities of the great devotees who are freed from all attachment. You must seek their association. And for this counteracts the effects of material attachment. So these devotees, these qualified devotees, these sadhus, they are free from all material attachment. This is the essential qualification. And that essential qualification is obtained when one comes to the spiritual transcendental platform, otherwise called Brahma-Bhuta. From the Brahma-Bhuta stage, one does not lament hankering for anything, that means desiring even anything, or lamenting for that which one does not have or which one lost. One is then samadarshana, equally disposed to all living entities, and is unaffected by the dualities of this material world. Now, we, all of us, particularly senior devotees in Krishna consciousness, we are actually meant to become these sadhus. Because otherwise, who is there for people who come to this temple? Who is there for them to associate with? We must, it's incumbent upon us to actually develop these qualities. And we must know the science of Krishna consciousness by now, how to do that. In order to become free from this detachment, one must let go of their material desires. The scientific, the spiritual science is laid out very clearly in Bhagavad Gita, that if one wants to understand how they are not the body, one must restrict the senses. If one does not restrict the senses in some way, it is impossible to begin to understand how we are not the body. But this does not need to be artificial. The practice of Krishna consciousness naturally, vairagya, this develops. We were quoting yesterday from Srimad Bhagavatam, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita, Chanayat Yasya Vairagyam Gyanam Chaya Rahaitukam, that by rendering devotional service, one automatically develops causeless knowledge and detachment from this world. So this detachment comes very quickly. We all experience it. When we feel that detachment, one must let go of whatever that attachment is. Otherwise, it becomes a stumbling block on our path of spiritual life. One young devotee, recently he asked me, he said his business, his method of maintaining himself, he plays bass guitar in a band. And so he was telling me that as he was practicing Krishna consciousness, he's losing his interest in playing guitar. And he asked, he said, so I thought, you know, because this is my livelihood, if I play songs about Krishna, then this will allow me to at least be able to continue my profession. And he asked if this is correct or not. And actually the answer is no. He should actually find another means of livelihood. He's by his practice of Krishna consciousness, he's beginning to feel the detachment from what he was doing before. He should not try to maintain that attachment simply by dovetailing. That's actually the opposite. The dovetailing is when we have attachment, we then, let's say if he has attachment to his guitar, then he plays songs about Krishna and he develops detachment. And when that detachment comes, then he lets it go. But he's trying to do it the opposite way, which is actually will become stumbling block for him in spiritual life. So this detachment, when it comes, we must let go. And we will see, sometimes also we're asked, you know, what is that threshold of attachment? We see some people, they have more, others have less. What is the proper amount that we should have? Well, there is no standard that applies to everyone. However, we should apply the criterion for ourselves. That wherever that standard begins, depending upon where it was when we took up spiritual life, we should see that it moves in time. That in time we become more and more detached and gradually let go of the things of this material world. And we can see, of course, the quintessential example of this is the six Goswamis, Raghunath Das Goswami, the embodiment of renunciation. Not artificial, not because he was trying to be renounced, but because of his natural satisfaction in Krishna consciousness, he didn't care for anything else. He didn't want, he didn't need anything else, simply Krishna. I had the opportunity when I was in Delhi last to go visit Swami Narayan's big temple that they built there. Did you see this place?
No, maybe second off closer.
Okay. Have you gone? Swami Narayan?
Yeah.
He's a this is not Narayan Maharaj. Okay, different. Swami Narayan, he's some kind of Mayavadi guy. But he's going all around the world. He's building huge, beautiful temples. There must be one here in the Bay Area somewhere. Shishigarnitaya ki chai, shijaganapaladev subhadadeva ki chai, shishiradagokulananda ki chai. Does he have one temple here in Bay Area?
Maybe Fremont. Fremont?
Fremont, yeah. Okay. So all of his temples are very elaborate, very huge. This one in Delhi is very amazing. They built one also in Jacksonville and near London, I think. So I was visiting there. They gave me a tour. And the Swami who gave me a tour, he was explaining how their sannyasis, I asked, you know, what is their practice? What do they do? And what their Swamis do, they take the same food as everybody else takes, but then they mix it with water and they make just this big mush, tasteless mush, and this is how they eat. So this is their way of practicing renunciation. That they have to, because of material attachment, they have to restrict or negate the senses because they're not actually developing a taste for spiritual life. So they're trying to approach, they're doing it the opposite of what the bhakti yogis do. The bhakti yogi is developing a taste, such a strong taste and attraction, attachment for Krishna, that all the things of this world become insignificant, even delicious foodstuff. That it's nothing. It's the renunciation comes automatically. There's no separate endeavor for it. But they're trying to go the other way. They're trying by renunciation alone to approach the absolute. But this formula cannot work. Because one requires some rasa. One requires some taste. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he writes in Bhakti Aloka that one must have some sense gratification. Otherwise, this becomes actually an impediment to spiritual life. Which was actually a rather startling thing to read. Bhaktivinoda saying we must have sense gratification. So, in Krishna consciousness, we do have that sense gratification in very wonderful ways that are completely dovetailed, completely spiritual process. To come every day and see the deities beautifully dressed is such a feast for the eyes. To taste nice Krishna prasadam, to sing and dance. These are things that everybody wants to have. But it's completely spiritual, and so it's not an impediment in spiritual life. So naturally, the devotees, by engaging in this tasty process of bhakti yoga, they develop natural detachment for sense gratification. Here, and not only in this life, but it says in the next. This means that they're not hankering, they're not thinking, I'll do this austerity this life, and next life, then I'll go to heaven, and then I'll enjoy. Right? So this is everybody's idea. Do some austerity this life, and so the next life I can go to heaven and planet. But devotee, he's so full with Krishna, the sense gratification becomes insignificant. He doesn't even care for it. Now we should be looking at our lives, and we should be seeing this develop. And if it's not developing, we should look at what we're doing, and we should understand why. We should figure out why that we're not developing this detachment. There's a reason. Our process is very scientific. In Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, again he's writing that devotee, he must look and see that I'm making more progress today. I'm further advanced in Krishna consciousness today than I was yesterday, or the day before, or week, or month, or year before. We must look and see that we're making some progress. That we're actually developing this attraction for Krishna, and we're developing detachment from material sense gratification. And if we're not, then we should look at and see what is the process. Where are we not following the process? Because that result is guaranteed from the process. If we're not following the process properly, we will not get the result. But if we are following properly, we must get that result. We must come to this stage of Brahma-Bhuta. Now there's a very important, very, very important clue that we should all understand how to develop this, how to become free from the stumbling blocks in spiritual life. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains his position. Bhuktaram jagatapasam sarvalokam maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatamam shantam richati. He is the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor, and the dearmost friend of everyone. This is Krishna's position. If we try to take Krishna's position in any one of those ways, we cannot be successful in spiritual life. If we want to be the proprietor, if we want to be the enjoyer, if we want to be the dearmost friend of others, we cannot come to the spiritual platform. Later in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, can you bring, please? Thank you. Ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text 24. Aham isar yajnanam bhukta cha prabhureva cha natu mam abhijanati tatvinatas chivantite. Krishna says, I am the only enjoyer and the master of all sacrifices. Those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. So Krishna is explaining his position. He is the enjoyer, the only enjoyer. And not only that, he's the only proprietor, and he's the only dearmost friend of all. Those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Fall down means become covered by Maya. So unless one is willing to accept Krishna in his position and see themselves as his servant, they must be controlled by Maya, which means that they cannot become free from material sense gratification. We see sometimes our devotees, they're complaining, I'm chanting Hare Krishna for 20, 25 years, still I cannot control my senses. This Krishna consciousness does not work. There was one devotee when I was here in 1988. I was having those Friday programs at my house. And one of our senior devotees at that time, can't remember his name. He came there and he was saying, he was convinced at that time that Krishna consciousness, that the process doesn't work. Because he was saying that we see that nobody's getting the result. And so on that basis, he actually left Krishna consciousness. It doesn't work if we try to take the place of Krishna. If we don't understand this point, this very, very important point, we cannot make progress. Our progress in spiritual life will be blocked. If we're trying to enjoy the things of this world, anything, if we're trying to enjoy our body, if we're trying to enjoy our senses in some way, trying to enjoy position, relationships, subtle sex life, gross sex life, these things, we cannot, our progress will be stopped. We have to understand, I'm the servant of Krishna, and we have to put ourselves in that position. Now, how do we do this? We can go through the brief analysis to understand this. When we are enjoying something, say we're tasting some nice food, and we're getting a lot of enjoyment from that taste, where does that enjoyment actually take place? Where is that experience rather taking place? On the tongue? In the mind, yes. The mind is the nexus of all the senses. The senses, they bring this sense stimulation to the mind, but the process of enjoyment is actually going on in the mind. So one must come to the point of being able to see the mind objectively and see what's going on there. And then when one sees that the mind is trying to enjoy, one must then say, no, this is Krishna's position. My position is Krishna's servant. This whatever this is meant for his enjoyment. Now, one has to, this way, become disconnected from the mind. It says in this sloka that when one is actually situated on the path of devotional service, he is able to control the mind. So this is the second point, the second stage of training in yoga. The first stage, to control the senses and understand how I'm not the body. But then we also have to come to understand how I'm not the mind. And the same process is applied there. Just like we restrict the senses somewhat to understand that we are different from the senses, we also have to restrict the mind, so that we can understand how we are different from the mind and see this duality, this difference between ourselves and the mind. And we have a process for doing that, which is... Japa. Japa, specifically. Chanting the holy names of Krishna. Japa, we want to fix the mind on the sound vibration of Krishna's name. And naturally the mind is wandering all around. And Krishna tells us, from whatever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. So, by this practice of bringing the mind under control, then we get to see, we see ourselves different from the mind. The materialist, he thinks he is the mind. There's some desire, I want, He doesn't see, this is the mind going on. I want. I have the desire. But the devotee, by practice of bringing the mind under control, can understand that the mind, this attraction for sense gratification, this is actually coming from the mind. This is explained very nicely in the Sangha of the Avanti Brahman in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Avanti Brahman formerly was very wealthy, even though he was a cruel and obnoxious and despicable person. Nobody wanted to be with him. But because he had money, people were tolerating. And then gradually in the course of time, he lost his wealth and then everybody abandoned him. So he was wandering around and because he had some training, just like our Ajamil. Ajamil later is reflecting about his earlier training after he saw the Yamadutas. So the Avanti Brahman also, after he was bereft of all fortune, he started to analyze his situation and where is the cause of my suffering coming from? Is it coming from the senses? Is it coming from the body? Is it coming from others? Is it coming from nature? But he realized that actually the source of all the suffering in the world is the mind. Because the mind is the place where this suffering and enjoyment goes on. This duality that we experience is actually created by the mind. When I put myself in the position of the enjoyer, I'm the person who's deciding what is enjoyable and what is not. Right? Let's take food. Maybe somebody here has some food that they don't like. I don't like black olives. Right? Most people, they like black olives. But I don't like black olives. So everybody has their unique individual taste. If I'm trying to be the enjoyer, I decide what I like, what I don't like. Oh, art is another good example. We have a lot of devotees. I don't know if they still do here, but in Europe, still the devotees are selling the Korean paintings, the Hong Kong paintings. And so you sell this art and you see that people, you know, something you think is very ugly, somebody will come and say, oh, it's so beautiful, just what I wanted. But you're thinking, oh, boy, you know, I wouldn't hang that in my house if he paid me. But this is art. I decide what I like, what I don't like. And because I'm the person who defines what is enjoyable, what is not, I actually create the duality that I suffer from in this world. Rather, the mind is creating the duality. So we have to learn to bring the mind under control. And by bringing the mind under control, we can see that this duality, this attachment for sense gratification is actually caused by the mind. If we then follow the principles of spiritual life given to us in Bhakti Yoga, our sadhana, restrict the mind, restrict the senses, then we can begin to see how we are not the mind, how we are not the senses. Then we come to the threshold of spiritual life. Earlier in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining to Arjuna why to control the mind. And he says, for the person who has conquered the mind, it's his best friend, but for one who has failed to do so, it's his greatest enemy. One should deliver himself with the help of the mind, not degrade himself, because the mind is a friend of the conditioned soul. Then, here's the secret of how to come to the spiritual platform. He says, for one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached. For he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Right? So this duality that we are suffering from or trying to enjoy, this now becomes removed when one has brought the mind under control. By bringing the mind under control, we can see that this suffering, this happiness and distress, this desire to enjoy, this is actually simply the business of the mind. And by bringing the mind under control, then one becomes free from that. This is the Brahma-Bhuta position. Brahma-Bhuta-prasanama nasochiti-nakankshiti samasarevishubhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. For one who is thus transcendentally situated, he wants... realizes the Supreme Brahman. He never laments nor desires to have anything. In that state, he is equally disposed to every living entity. So again, both of these verses in the 6th chapter in 1854, Brahma Bhuta, these explain that when one achieves the transcendental platform, by bringing the mind and senses under control, that this duality is removed. So, it happens in a very natural way in the process of sadhana bhakti, but we have to be very careful to follow that process carefully, properly. If we stay in Krishna consciousness, continue simply doing things externally, but we are not introspective, if we are not examining what's going on in the mind, if we don't see what our desires are, if we are not looking and seeing if we're making progress, then our progress may be very, very slow. It does not have to be slow. Our acharyas, they have given us a very powerful method of practicing Krishna consciousness by which we can quickly come to this Brahma Bhuta position. But if we don't follow their instructions, if we deviate from their good counsel, then we cannot get the result. Typically we see that in the Western countries particularly, that we do not generally follow we do not carefully follow the instructions of our acharyas. They tell us that we should live in a secluded place and not associate with non-devotees. But practically speaking, to live in the Western cities, it's almost impossible to follow this instruction. Prabhupada, he wanted us to go live in villages. To live in a village means to be away, particularly from modern people. Modern people, they don't want to go to villages. They want to be in the city where the modes of passion and ignorance are prominent. But our devotees, we're not taking that instruction very seriously. We're staying in the cities. In the cities, we have to associate with non-devotees. We have to work with them. And the result is that generally we see our devotees are not making very good progress in spiritual life. We should appreciate the value of Krishna consciousness. How it's inestimable and beyond estimation. The benefit, the happy transcendental result that we can get by following this process. It's worth giving up everything in this material world in order to achieve that. And we should be prepared to do so instead of trying to live comfortably in this life and then also try to have Krishna consciousness. This is what Prabhupada is explaining in this purport. He says, generally people, they want to live in a pious way, they can have some sense gratification in this life. But this is cheating ourselves. We're cheating ourselves. To simply have a little sense gratification in what? For that we have to suffer the duality. You want to enjoy, you have to suffer. We cannot have one without the other. It goes like the back end of the car goes with the front end of the car. You want to enjoy something, you're going to have to suffer. There's no escaping that. Because we create that duality. So give up this idea of this insignificant sense gratification and get Krishna consciousness. Become free. Freedom. There's no demand from the senses. There's nothing that you want from this material world. This is freedom. Otherwise, everyone's in simply prison being pulled around by the senses. We have a very powerful process, but we have to follow it carefully, and when we do that, we can quickly achieve the result of Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Thinking, a couple of things. These devotees are having problems, in devotional service, you could say. There seems to be quite number of them. And you raise that one devotee from India and say, this process doesn't work for me, but that realization. But it seems kind of like I was thinking that there's just a lot of ways, you know, that we can make a mistake, you can say, and not follow the process. I mean, like just taking the japa, I mean, there's 10 offenses against the holy name. If you're chanting, you're infested with those offenses, you can go on chanting for millions of years and you won't make any offenses.
Right.
I mean, if you have, simply invoke the mercy of Lord Chaitanya before I chant. I was just thinking, you know, making a list of all the different things. I think devotees have done that a few times, you know. What are all the things that can be stumbling? But what are some common, let's try this question, what are some common ways that, you know, that have caused devotees not to make progress, you know, not to take advantage of the process?
That was my last comment. Our acharyas have chalked out the path for us. It's very clear. But we don't follow. If we simply read the two slokas from Upadeshamrita, the six things favorable and the six things that are unfavorable for discharging devotional service, in both of those lists is to not associate with non-devotees. Okay, and I gave the example of myself, how simply by working with people, I wasn't even talking with them. I'd stay on the phone talking to my clients all day, but just being in that environment, you know, where everybody goes dressed in a suit and tie and, you know, putting on airs of material success, I was becoming infected by that same consciousness. Huh? So, our acharyas, they tell us, don't associate with these materialistic people. But we don't do that. Because the reason is because we haven't actually developed an alternative culture. We're stuck in this culture, and to maintain ourselves, we have to associate with these non-devotees to make money, and we can't get the result. This is why we need these village communities, so that we can live independently by growing our own food.
Specific question about rural communities. I mean, sometimes I used to think, you know, well, will rural communities work in, you know, the northern latitudes because it's so cold, you just gotta fight to keep alive, you know? I mean, it's so cold. You go to India, okay, you can live there, I mean, okay, it's cold in northern India, but, you know, you can basically live there without, you know, dying. And of course, South India is 70 degrees all the time. It never gets cold in South India. Of course, it gets really hot, but, you know. So it's easy to do a rural community. You don't have to fight the elements. But in North America, you know, Europe and so on, it gets so cold. You just got to fight to live.
Our ancestors have lived there for many, many years. So it's quite possible.
It's true that you live in Europe, but of course they were barbarians too, up until you...
Why do you say? That's the Western worldview.
Well,
it's not the Vedic worldview.
I mean, the Germanic tribes are pretty barbaric.
Well, that wasn't so long ago. Go back further. There was Vedic culture all over the world at one time, and they were there. So,
well, maybe they had vermenical power. But you know, they're the yogis in the Himalayas. They sit there with no clothes on, chanting. You know, they got no problem because they can warm their bodies up.
I passed this last winter in a little village house heated by a wood stove, and I didn't chop the wood. The young men, they were doing that, but you know, we had some food stuff set aside. It was very simple living, but we survived the winter. It was not, you know, we would go to the well and draw water and, you know.
Go below zero
then? Huh?
Go below zero?
Oh, yeah, sure. It was below zero Fahrenheit even.
For a few weeks. Below freezing temperature.
It was, for most of the winter, it was below. It actually went below freezing at the middle of December, and it stayed there until spring. What did you?
I totally disagree. Srila Prabhupada established this movement, and the main purpose of this movement is to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. This is the most closest and dearest to Prabhupada, and when you personally hand the books to people out on the street, then if they get that book, I don't care even if they throw it in the trash. They at least touch that book. Prabhupada wants us to distribute the books. We should have a temple in San Francisco, and we should just be popping up those Bhagavad Gita's, Krishna books, and these farm communities are meant for the devotees to take refuge when they want to regenerate themselves, but the main thing Prabhupada wants us to do is distribute his books. And I'm in Maya because I don't distribute his books.
Thank you for your honesty. I agree with you 100%. The problem is, just like you, who's distributing the books?
We have devotees distributing the books.
There's some, right? And when we do that, we're protected.
That's not a problem. You have to know what the standard is. If there's a standard, you should at least know it.
Well,
the standard is distribute the books, and if you don't distribute the books, then that's okay, but you have to know what the standard is.
Well, it's not okay. It's not okay because they're not. We don't become Krishna conscious.
There might be just only five devotees in this temple, but I'll tell you something. These are the most five wonderful devotees. And it's up to Krishna what way, and it's up to Prabhupada. I just think we need to be in the big cities. We need to be there distributing food for life programs, hiring on. If we're in the country, we're just keeping it to ourselves. Like I said, the farm communities are good because we teach how to take care of the cows. We show by example how to do the agriculture. But we need to be in downtown San Francisco distributing the books, food for life, have a temple, la la la, proper established like this.
Okay, do it. I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Michael.
We have an incident occur a little earlier about the dress. You know, when you go into the kitchen and you're not in a sari, or you're doing service in pajamas and you're not dressed in the dhoti. So anyway, I was thinking about it a lot. And one of the things that I thought about was the culture that Prabhupada was teaching us. And he like those who are on book distribution, they're passing out the books, and that's wonderful. They're the warriors. But also there's a complete civilization within Srila Prabhupada's message, and now we can a community that's based on principles of godliness, Krishna consciousness. So the culture, it's important to have a very good culture environment in a temple, because this is where we learn. This is like we're our hospital, so to speak. So we just remember that. You know, that the material world isn't real. It's actually becoming more and more degraded. It's not any fun out there anymore. Can't have any fun out there. It's
just is there a question with that or just a comment?
I was just sort of commenting.
Okay.
I just wanted to just address her issue a little bit on this one. And certainly, I'm not going to see to it. It's right that, you know, we're a preaching movement, that's for sure. I'm talking about lots of super scripted books. I don't think anybody can question that. But I do see, practically speaking, I mean, a lot of devotees, they only get married. That's quite, I mean, that's part of what Varanasian culture, too. I mean, that's part of what Papa gave us, devotees don't get married. Most of those probably will get married. You know, there'll be some preachers, some sannyasis, and obviously the children in the movement, they should grow up and, you know, 25 at least, they should be preachers. Like the Mormons, they got a really good thing going right now. It's because they send all the kids out on the streets preaching until they're, you know, for a couple of years. Now, we should do that too. That's a big, you know, really powerful thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, so now the thing is but my point is okay, now they get to the age of being in the hostel, 25 or whatever, they get married, then what happens? I mean, I don't think it's possible for the temples to support all of the hostels that they're generating. I don't think it's possible. Maybe it is, but I don't think so. I don't think the temple life, you know, the temple structure is made to, you know, support every hostel that, you know, comes to that stage. So what do the grahasthas do? I mean, obviously some are going to be preachers. Some of them, you know, will fit into the temple kind of scheme nicely. Some grahasthas just can't accept the austere life of, you know, being a brahmana and so on. But so there seems to me there's going to be a fairly large percentage of grahasthas who just aren't going to fit into that kind of, you know, preaching scheme, the austere life kind of scheme. And the temples, even if you had, say, 100 grahasthas right now, are all preachers. Now what are they going to do? They could go and make their own little temple somewhere, you know, and make it go. So that's possible. The other way is that, you know, they do rural communities. Which Prabhupada also wanted. Prabhupada put a lot of emphasis on New Vrindavan and so on, Dina Madhuri. Things haven't worked out the way he wanted, I don't think.
The story's not over.
No, that's a good point.
I don't want to argue with Mataji. She's certainly correct in what she's saying, but at the same time, you know, what changed in our movement is when our grahasthas started having children, and then how are these children going to be supported? In our Los Angeles community is a good example of how you can have a devotional community in the city, because there's a lot of money coming there for BBT and for FATE and some of the other projects that were based in Los Angeles. But Los Angeles is a very rare exception compared to any other temple in North America and perhaps most of the world. So then, how are the devotees going to support themselves? So this comes back to fruitive work like we were discussing last night. Or you go to village. Prabhupada wanted his devotees to actually live in the village. At one point he said, the brahmacharis and sannyasis, they can stay in the city and preach. All the grahasthas should go to the village. Because there the children can be raised nicely. You can maintain yourself without doing fruitive work. You just grow some food. And, you know, you don't have to have this fruitive mentality, how I'm going to get and spend. And that's also the way that Krishna has given us to live. Krishna gave us that way to live. He's created this world. This is how he arranged it. And we simply have to take it up. One can also preach from the village. In New Vrajadam in Hungary, they have more than 30,000 visitors coming there every year. Almost 100 a day come. And they give them, I went on a tour, they give them very straight Krishna consciousness. They don't talk about, you know, they talk a little bit about sustainability, but the first thing that these people hear is about Prabhupada and how Prabhupada established the movement, and then they take him in, they show him the deities, they show him Prabhupada sitting in the Vyasasan. It's straight preaching. And it's done in a farm, a village community, which is difficult to get to. It's at least 2 hours travel for most people to get there. So a lot of people go way out of their way for that, and they have nice preaching there. So the other communities, if they endeavor, they can also do that. Nova Gokula, we've read how in the past they've had many programs there, brought a lot of people there, they made a good impression. Also Bhaktivedanta Manor, although it's not specifically in a village, still the setting is some, they have cows and so on. So the preaching, devotee naturally wants to preach. It's just simply a matter of how.
Everything is coming from the heart, not the mind. A lot of the devotees, everything is coming from the heart. I don't think it's mind business. It's all coming from the heart. Even the karmis have heart too. They can feel it.
Okay, connect that. Connect the dots for me.
When you say, oh, you have to control your mind, you have to control your mind, you have to control your mind. I think when somebody walks into the temple, the mind doesn't exist anymore. They go crazy when they walk in the temple. It's the heart. When karmis walk into here, it's not their mind anymore, because this is Vaikuntha. When they see the deities, it starts to beat in the heart, and then you have to treat the karmis heart.
Okay, good.
So I don't know. It's you cannot tell people, oh, control your mind.
Well,
control maybe. Control your mind. No.
Maybe not
going to... Feel inside your heart, Krishna consciousness.
That's not going
to... A lot of men and scientists and things like that, they always talk about the mind. The heart. You know, we have to help these carnies with their hearts.
The mind of the heart is the seed.
When they walk out the temple, it's their mind.
Well, it's not
they
the,
walk in the temple, it's
not the,
heart.
First thing you're going to say to them, but Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is telling us we have to control the mind.
Yeah.
So,
yes, but the thing is that this process
that comes a little
is not
later.
A mind controlling. This is not a mind controlling. This is a heart controlling.
See, my point is that the heart is the sitting place of the mind. When you're saying heart, you're actually meaning mind. That's fine. Just the heart is the sitting place of the mind.
You cannot separate the mind and the heart. When you walk into this temple, the carnies, they're not using their brains. You can actually see them not using their brains.
Krishna says, for one who's conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached. This is Brahma Bhuta position.
I know, but I just...
So... This means that the mind is controlled.
You cannot control the mind.
No, Krishna does
so
that. Arjuna made that argument, but Krishna told him, no, it's possible by constant practice and detachment. And when you actually bring the mind under control, the nature of the mind changes. He becomes submissive. He becomes a servant. Krishna says the mind can be the friend of the conditioned soul. And when the mind is brought under control, he becomes a friend. He helps us to remember Krishna. He helps us to stay Krishna conscious. But we have to come to that point of bringing the mind under control first.
The process of doing that is eating prasadam, taking darshan, there's a process, chanting.
Constant practice and detachment is a process that Krishna gives.
When you walk into this temple, you've got to see all the people that walk in here. You can't tell them that you've got to control your mind. You have to talk to them.
Not immediately. Don't say that first.
Yeah.
A little later.
You have to say, this is Krishna consciousness. It'll help your heart. You have to say, oh, let's control our minds.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.